Welcome to the latest edition of He Said,
She Said.
I'm Peter Schorsch.
I'm Michelle Todd Schorsch.
Welcome to 2020 and the first episode of the second season, right?
Yeah, it's totally our second season. It's our second session.
Second session.
So it's a perfect time to start our second season.
We came out strong out of the Schorsch holidays. 100 days of Schorsch has now ended.
No.
Well,
it ends tomorrow. Babe, it's fine. You don't need to stop that and edit that out. It's okay for people to hear that.
Yeah, I always do the thing where I'm taping for when I think this might drop. And you're right. I should tape it for...
We're recording today.
Right. So we have one more big day of Schorsch. 100 days.
We do. The most important day. Without this day, there would be no 100 days
There would
of
not be the first 99, which is our 8th anniversary. So happy anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
To the Winter White Wedding for all of our friends who remember that day. Alan Suski doesn't listen to this podcast, so we're not going to give him a
great best man he is.
Shout out there, but Amanda Taylor listens and Amanda Houston listens. And so
she's Amanda Taylor.
Oh, she's Amanda Taylor, right?
She is. She did not change her name.
And there
goes. See, babe? This is why I have to correct you sometimes. Yeah. It's not because I'm just trying to be nitpicky.
I just make so many mistakes.
It's okay. It's all right. Yeah, she's still Amanda Taylor.
And we haven't seen them in so long because...
Since your birthday.
Because
she's very pregnant.
Yeah.
And you're in dry January, so we're a little bit of house cats.
And so, no, and Derek won't come hang out with me, basically. Although we could all just be dry January together. He's definitely in dry
January. We should go down to their house and go help them set up their nursery while we're in the middle of dry January.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of work.
Well, I mean, by help them set up, I just mean just go see what they've done so far. I don't mean actually do any setting of the up.
But I don't know if I can hang out in Teresia without a bloody.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, it lends itself to Marys with Derek.
It's fine.
I am going to have a Bloody Mary or two at Gasparilla this weekend. I will let you know that.
I'm sure you're going to have more than two at Gasparilla. When we all agreed to dry January, we all made a special dispensation.
But then I'm going to jump right back on the bandwagon.
Absolutely.
At 12:01 a.m. on Sunday.
Well, we'll be asleep long before 12:01 a.m., so don't worry. We'll be on the bandwagon.
Well, all right, so session has started.
Today is officially the first day because we were recording on Tuesday.
Right.
We know this will drop later, but yes.
The state of the states are going on right now. It sounds like Ron DeSantis, I'm looking on Twitter as we're doing this. He's doing his thing. He's happy. Although a lot of people are suggesting he should use a teleprompter as opposed to look at the iPad. Jose Oliva has declared war again.
Wait, that's what they've gone to now? People use iPads.
Yeah.
Wow. No more white binders.
Yeah. Or he could be using, I don't know that he's not using a white binder.
Okay.
They're just saying he's looking down as opposed to like looking at a teleprompter.
Not everybody likes a teleprompter. Not everyone's good on a teleprompter.
How far out is it too? I mean, is it hard? Sometimes it's hard for people to see, right? Like,
no, you can change the font size.
Okay.
And you control, and you also control the pacing of how quick the words scroll. That's why you practice and rehearse it, and there has to be a fair amount of trust in the person who's controlling the teleprompter.
That sounds
for you.
Like somebody who has worked with a governor before for a state of the state.
I would not have been responsible for that, though.
Does somebody press the button like?
There's someone who controls the teleprompter. Yes.
Who was that in the Christian administration?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, that you could ask Stephanie Smith. She would probably know better.
And so,
should we just call her right now and find out?
We should. We need her back. We need Steph back on the.
We're gonna see her.
When?
Gasparilla.
Oh, okay. Good, 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 good.
So yeah, dry January on hold for Gasparilla.
She was a Influence Magazine Golden Rotunda winner. And so congratulations to that.
What
Influence
did she
Magazine,
win the Golden Rotunda for? I forgot already.
Disruptive Lobbyist of the Year for the disruption that scooters.
That was a picture in the scooters.
Yeah.
That was a good, I liked that photo.
That was a cool, I liked that award. So Influence is out. We crushed it on the website this week. We did on Monday, 71 stories going into legislative session. So I was
like,
very...
Like table setters?
We did 31 table setters and then just more coverage. And so I was very excited about the coverage that we have started session. I think we're going to come into it very strong.
Yeah, you have some new great team members. You brought in some extra help to get us through session, which is
we've
great.
We've got three up there, three reporters.
Full-time in full-time
Tallahassee. Full-time in Tallahassee, plus Rick Flagg. So we've got four full-time folks up there, which is two more than last session. And so on top of the rest of the team kicking in, actually, Janelle Irwin's done a great job, like kind of like stepping in as like as an editor. So that's been very nice. So there's a lot of great coverage on Florida politics. Check that out as well. But we have somebody coming up on the show who's taking a step back from the process, even though I think we'll come to learn that he's probably busier than ever because right. he's so in demand now. And that's our good friend. This is somebody we've wanted to have on, John Max Stepanovich. Max Stepanovich, as everybody knows him. But he's going to be on the podcast in a few moments. We did a deep dive with him about everything that he's up to.
A really fun, far-reaching interview that shared some sides of the Mac the Knife that people might not know because he's, you know, his origin story is part of what makes him so quotable.
Well, and I talk about this for a second in our interview, but I can't hammer it enough that, like, yes, Mac is at the end of a career, but this you're talking to a Tom Brady figure. He is on the Mount Rushmore of Florida lobbyists. I mean, he absolutely is. Jim Krogh, probably Ron Book. I mean, these are the folks that basically forged the modern Republican Party.
Yeah.
Although Jim didn't, but they have been at the pinnacle of the career during this last 20, 25 years. And, you know, Mac was there as a chief of staff to Martinez, et cetera. And so he's just, you know, it's just always interesting for me really to talk to him. Like, I don't really talk to him about what's going on. He even says it, like, he knows I know what's going on more than he does right now, but I want to hear, like, his perspective on it is better than anybody's because he knows how to tie whatever is going on in the Capitol or in the country or with what has happened before. And right. It reminds you that there is, you know, no history. There's nothing new except the history you don't know. And so that's how I feel when I talk with Max Stepanovich.
Well, why don't we go ahead and let our listeners get to know a little bit more about Mac?
Joining us now is John Max Stepanovich. I have never called him John. I don't know who does. I guess I should call him Mr. Stepanovich from time to time, but he's probably the most recognized lobbyist in Florida. He was, he had Bruce McGill portray him in the movie Recount. He is a frequent contributor, columnist. He is regarded as probably the best quote.
That's what I was going to say. He's definitely the best quote in Florida politics.
And, you know, I think I'm going to get my nose right up, you know, up in your ass on this one, Mac. Unlike a lot of these other folks who pontificate, as I have told people, you've done the dance. You were at the very top of the game. You were the big swinging dick for a little while there and for a long while. And we're still a power even after that. But you were not just a one-term congressman or something like that. You were at the apex of this industry. So joining us is Max Stepanovich. Mac, what are you up to?
Well, since I have lingered so long, unlike many of my peers, I listen to your description and I feel either like a shark or a cockroach. I mean, I've apparently been able to endure a long time. I'm actually, Peter, a little busier than I was before. As you know, I'm writing two op-eds a month for the Tampa Bay Times. I'm doing some consulting work for a couple of clients, and I am potentially going to work on some political stuff later in the year. And then I drive the family school bus and pick up my grandchildren in the afternoon. So I'm pretty busy.
I'd say the family school bus is probably your most important job. How special for you to be able to have that time with your grandkids?
Well, that's right. I ask when they get in the car, there's three of them I pick up. every day almost, and I asked, tell me something you've learned today. One of them, who shall go unnamed, tells me really interesting stuff. As near as I can tell, the other two aren't learning anything. They never had anything to tell me.
Well, to give you some help with your after-school pickups, a lot of reading I have read has said that that question doesn't entice children to really engage with you about the day. But if you go through a couple of specific questions, like what's one person that you talk to for Ella, I say on the playground today, or what did you do specifically in science class? They say you're more inclined to get an answer from kids when you pick them up from school if you give them very specific questions instead of an open-end, what's one thing you learned today? So maybe try that out and see if your other two grandkids are more engaging with you.
Well, I fell back on more traditional economic incentives. I told them, if you want a slushie at the Circle K, you're going to have to tell me something you learned. So now they started taking notes, and they'll open up their notebook and read me something.
That's spoken like a former lobbyist right there. Let's let's give them an economic incentive to perform. I like it.
So you're saying you are for film incentives. You're against Americans for Prosperity. That's basically where you're coming down with.
No, I just said I believe people respond to the proper incentives, whatever they are, and they vary with the person.
Michelle's kind of right. When I would get into the car, I would ask Ella, I'd say, how was your day? And you really don't get anything out of them. Oh, it's fine or whatever. But if you're like you said, who did you play with during your first recess? She's like, oh, well, I played with Elizabeth, but she didn't share. And I decided to do this. And then I went over it is kind of interesting now.
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday at pickup for us, it was, do you know that a whale weighs 16 tons? And oh, by the way, how much does my horse weigh? Because I want to find out how many biscuits it takes to equal the weight of one whale. So that's...
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. So we were trying to figure out horse versus whale math at the barn yesterday.
I went through a horse phase in my early 40s. I go through various phases and then give them up. But anyway, I took English writing and jumping lessons in my early 40s.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thought I was pretty cool until I discovered on a not too tall offense how far it is to the ground when you're 53, 54 from a tall horse. And then I gave it up.
Who are you trying to impress?
No, I was, doing it just because. The only thing I haven't really done is flying lessons, but I had an advanced certificate in scuba diving until I started wondering why I was paying to be afraid. You know, did the horseback riding thing. Of course, you know, as you know, fished offshore for 30 years and enjoyed that, and just ran out of steam as I aged on that one finally, and ran out of fishing buddies when my grandchildren got older. But I wasn't trying to impress anybody on the horses. I didn't know anybody who cared.
I thought there would have been, I don't know, a woman on the other side of that at the very beginning. Who knows? Maybe he said it was back when he was in the...
No, he said when he was 40.
Oh, okay.
I was in my 40s.
He was in his 40s, okay. Yeah. Well, very happy
awkward.
Man. Yes.
I had all the woman I needed, and she was totally unimpressed.
Yeah.
By the way, that's literally like what I'm saying to him off mic. Like, what are you talking about? He's got a lovely wife.
Hey, listen, that's the beauty of the podcast. We just, you know, we do it live. I put my foot in my mouth half the time, and then Michelle corrects me, and people like it.
Mary and I will have been married 38 years in June, and she takes no crap off of me, and she takes no excuses from me because she is the other woman, so she knows the drill.
There you go. Thank you, Mac. By the way, just so you know, Michelle and I, we are celebrating our 8th anniversary today. It's tomorrow, but we're kind of getting into the mood today. There's a lot of romance in the air over here. So we got through the 7-year itch very easily. There was no itching by either one of us. And so
There better not have been.
And so I'm doing dry January. Well, so is Michelle. She's joined me. So I'm doing dry January.
No, wait. I didn't join you. I'm the one who started it. I am the one who conned all of you clowns into doing exactly what I wanted you to do all along.
I'm doing that.
On the night of Peter's birthday, I convinced everyone when they were good and sauced,
well,
Mac,
I'm proud of you both, but I would not place too much store in it. I have quit drinking twice, and this is very biblical.
Okay.
For 7-year stretches. Twice in a row, I have not drank for 7 years, not twice in a row, but two different right. times. There have been a total of 14 years and 2 7-year stretches when I didn't drink at all. And at the end of both of them, I, of course, told myself, well, obviously, I don't have a drinking problem. And then again, facts prove me wrong.
Are you you right now? You do like you do a nice little glass of scotch at night. Is that what didn't I see?
Oh, no, I'll drink a couple of glasses of wine with dinner, and then I'll have 3-4 ounces of Irish whiskey when I'm reading after dinner. I'm too old to, and I know there are a lot of old drunks, but I'm too old at 71 to be able to stand the kind of hard drinking I used to do when I was younger. I just physically can't take it. And interestingly enough, from a chemistry perspective, I don't seem to want it anymore.
Did your dad drink?
My natural father was an alcoholic who killed himself, as was his mother who killed herself. So yes.
This is going to be news to me as we.
Yeah. More on the Mac origin story.
Who is the spry young man that you visit every day in the home?
He is. There's a little irony there. My father married my brother when we were, 8 and 7 or 9 and 8, around 1957. And he adopted us, which is how I became a Stepanovich. I was originally Mixon, a distant cousin of Governor Mixon, and a distant cousin of Ed Moore here in Tallahassee. My great-great-great-grandfather, Jesse Willis, founded Williston around 1850. My folks came to Florida around 1835. So, I have children with Mary, but I adopted them. So it's kind of, I don't know if it's ironic or just coincidence and all or whatever, but my father has no natural children and I have no natural children.
Well, and I'm just thinking about how I always bust your balls about you and Ed Moore sometimes looking alike. Now it kind of, it isn't that I bust your balls. It's that Facebook goes ahead and tries to tag you tag him as one of the people.
They tag me with Moore. Yeah, they tag me with Moore a lot with their facial recognition software. And, undoubtedly there's some resemblance, but it's basically a overweight, old man with white facial hair thing. We all look alike. And the only thing that distinguishes us is that some ride Harleys trying to pretend they're not what they are and the rest of us don't.
Well, so now you know what it feels like to be oppressed and discriminated against, because that's the big issue right now. Like they say with facial recognition, they don't believe they're ever going to be able to solve it. Like that they, now maybe in 100 years or something like that, but they cannot get the race, the biases out of facial recognition software. And in doing so, they don't think that they're going to ever fully implement it because it will cause so much harm and so many problems. And therefore, without a desire to fully implement it, there's never going to be the same research level done with it. And so I studied a lot about this over the last month, just in advance of this technology conference I was going to go to. There's just a lot of problems with facial recognition. Going to your adoption story, one of the great parts of Michelle's eulogy for her father, and it was an extraordinarily moving part, was she told the story about Papa Ben, that Papa Ben interceded very early, at the beginning of Michelle's life. And
yeah, he didn't adopt me, but he was not my biological father, but he is on the birth certificate. Yeah, he stepped in. So there's something to be said for men who make the choice to raise children.
Well, my brother and I met my father at a basketball game in Williston, and we liked him and he liked us, so we introduced him to our mother.
Oh my goodness. What a great story that is. Wow. That's incredible. Some divine intervention was probably at play there too, Mac.
Well, and now I'm going to say something outrageous that'll get y'all ratioed all to hell. He always explained to people in a not very evolved way that he had to marry the cow to get those calves.
Jesus Christmas.
Listen, see, that did not offend me in the least. I am not the PC police over here. That's hilarious. I mean, it was funny. That's a turn of phrase my dad would have used.
He'll be 98 in May, and he's healthier than I am, and his mind is shot. I mean, it's a little bit like oatmeal, but he's still got a great sense of humor. He introduces me to people as his second favorite son.
That is perfect. I love it.
Well, and to your credit, I mean, and I know you do good with your grandkids, but I believe there's something to be said about going over to those homes. Those homes are not pretty. They're not always the easiest. It's not always, you got to have a lot of patience. You know, it's not easy. It's just, it's not something like, I'm sure you don't wake up every day and say, I can't wait to go over. I mean, I know you want to see your dad, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not always the easiest.
No, my brother and I alternate. He's about an hour away, lives down on the coast at Spring Warrior Creek, for God's sake, 14 permanent residents. And we alternate. We go see my dad because we love him and want to. But you're right. We also go to see him because we ought to. And those kinds of duties continuing to be discharged, I think, matter. And we would all be better off if more folks did it.
Well, something popped up in my head. I am fascinated by the kind of quote cabal that you're a part of. It's you, Steve Schale, Rick Wilson. It's like whenever a New York Times reporter is on deadline and they got to figure out what the damn swing voters in Kissimmee are doing, they call you, they call David Johnson. They get, you know, there's six or seven of you all. That are the go-tos for the national press. How does that work? I mean, do they, you know, I'm not one of those. I get like secondary calls. Whenever you guys are all on vacation, I'll get a Daily Beast reporter that'll call me and they'll say, hey, by the way, do you have Max Stepanovich's cell phone number? And so how does, how much of your day do you spend with that? Just, you know, giving out freaking, you know, little gems every, I mean, do you remember them? Do you say, I can't wait for Maggie Haberman to talk to me again so I can.
I mean, do you keep a notepad with you? And you're like, wait, this is a great little quote I need to write down.
Some of them I remember, and I'll tell you a story here in a second. Some of them I remember, and some of them just come to me. I mean, maybe gift's the right, wrong word, but it's an ability to synthesize something or capture something in a few words that I have to be very careful here not to pat myself on the back too much. I do not particularly like poetry. I don't have the kind of mind that appreciates poetry, but in the sense that great quotes are distillations that call things to mind in other people's minds, it's a little bit like poetry. And so perhaps Schale and Wilson and Johnson and I have a little bit of the poet in us. But to your question, one of the more notorious things I once said in the 1986 gubernatorial race, I was referring to Lou Fry at the time in the primary, and I said what is now a pretty widely used quote that the problem with wrestling with a pig is that you both get dirty and the pig likes it. I had gotten that off the back of a po' boys menu. And I had waited patiently like a lion laying in the weeds. Use it.
Ah, that's so Tallahassee. There's a little bit of that. You know, I think one of the things that we forget the most in the process is how agrarian Florida is.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I always try and remind folks, especially, and I will say, I feel very blessed, and Michelle is also very respectful of this, not of me, but of the same quality, that we very much feel like bridges. Like, I feel like the young lobbyist that spent 1 year working for Rubio, who's out there now, has no goddamn idea what's going on and how. He doesn't know how the majority was built or who Bob Martinez was or who Askew were. But I will say, and I was blessed, you know, I got to work with Askew when I was in college. I get to talk to people like you. You know, I always, you know, you and I have had lunch at the club probably a dozen times. And I always feel genuinely honored about that, because I feel like, you know, you do have to, we do, a lot of this is just spoken word passed down like they used to do 2,000 years ago.
Well, one of the things that, you know, but most people don't know is, you know, we live in a state with close to 20 million people, but from a government perspective, it's actually a very, very small, and this may be true in Sacramento, it may be true in Albany, it may be true everywhere, but political Florida is actually a very small, relatively small group of people who are intertwined and interwoven in ways that outsiders never see. Gwen Graham is the godmother of my dog. Now, that's... That doesn't sound very important, but Gwen Graham's the godmother of my dog. And her mother, Gwen, you know, her mother, Adele, served on the Manchin Commission with my wife and frequently direct messages me on Facebook. Leroy Collins, I'll tell you a story. I don't know how much time we have here. But
we're open-ended.
We have as much time as you want, Mac.
I was in Tallahassee with my dad one summer when I was 9. He was a union plumber, and he was on the road. There was no work in Gainesville, so he was on the road, and he was working up here, and I was out of school, so he brought me up here, and I was interested in government even then, believe it or not. So I sat on the steps of the back steps of the old Capitol. There wasn't a new Capitol then, and what is the plaza was a parking lot, and there were labeled parking spaces, Secretary of State, Commissioner of Agriculture, Governor. So I wanted to see the governor, and so I sat there all one day, and about mid-morning, this little foreign car pulls in, parks into the governor's parking space. Young woman gets out and goes inside. Same thing happens the next day. Same thing happens the third day. She gets out of the car and she says, little boy, she says, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm waiting for the governor. In case you don't know it, you're parking in this parking space. So at about 10 minutes till noon, a big black limousine pulls up. Big highway patrol captain gets out of it, said, and she asked me my name. He said, are you Mac Stefanovich? And I said, sure. I said, yes, I am. I was scared to death. He said, well, the governor would like to have lunch with you. So I ran across Monroe Street. My dad was down in a ditch with a bunch of guys laying some soil pipe. And I said, Daddy, can I go to lunch with the governor? And they all laughed. I said, sure. So I hauled ass back up the hill and across the street, jumped in the limo, and was taken to the mansion, and Leroy Collins and I had grilled cheese sandwiches and french fries in the downstairs office. The next time I was in that office, I was chief of staff to a governor.
That's really amazing. And it's amazing how chance encounters like that maybe change the course of your life, right? I mean, maybe that meeting with the governor is kind of what led you to politics.
Well, I was interested in it anyway, but at the end of that story, which is kind of funny that Peter might appreciate it. As lunch was ending and it was time for me to go back, he said, would you like a souvenir? Well, at the time, along one wall was this huge glass case, and in it was a satin Yankees jacket signed by the championship Yankees, Maris, all those, you know, Mickey Mantle, all those guys. And I said, yeah, I'll take that jacket. Governor Collins said, well, how about you take this brass cannon? You take this brass cannon off my desk instead.
What was the order? It went Collins, and then who was after Collins? Was it Askew?
It might have been Askew, yeah.
Okay.
It might have been. Let's see, if I was 9, it was 57. No, it might not have been Askew. There were others in there. I'd have to look at
There's a couple, you know, there, in there like that I don't know that had like
there
maybe
was Hayden Burns. There was Hayden Burns, there was Robert King High. Claude Kirk squeezed in there. Askew was on further down the road. There were 3 or 4 between Governor Collins, I think. And Governor Collins would have been in the 50s.
Going back to just, I want to close the loop on that. The quote you said about how agrarian Florida is. But I bring that up because the politics is so skewed to the rural. I mean, it still is. I mean, look who's going to be Senate president. It's going to be an egg farmer, you know, and it's just like, you know, Florida. I always tell the young kids, look at a satellite photo of Florida, and you see the bright lights going from Tampa Bay over to Orlando, and you see South Florida. But then pretty much everywhere else, yeah, there's a little speckle of nighttime light in Gainesville and Tallahassee and Jacksonville. Rest of the damn state is just all is either farms or swamps or a combination thereof. And I just feel like it's not that I feel like we've forgotten about that, but it is a reminder of how the politics, like you say. I think you brought up something to me. You said it to me about 5 years ago, and you were, you know, at the twilight of your illustrious career. And you said, yeah, I don't know all 120 of these folks anymore, but I know the right 10 or 12 of them.
That's right.
It really does, in a state of 20-something million people, it does come down to a very intimate number of people. I find that very fascinating about Florida politics. In a way, it's kind of, it's like South Florida politics. South Florida doesn't even matter in Tallahassee, other than the one or two people that ascend to leadership out of there. But what happens in Miami doesn't impact Tallahassee at all. I mean, it's just this, it's this alien, bizarro world.
Well, you've got to, I think, you know, it helps to have a gift for a knack for getting along with people. And I would suggest that at least historically, more country folk have had that subtlety or softness, if you will, that made it easier to persuade people to follow you or support you or agree with you. That may be changing now as the state changes, but until very recently, that has been the case. I mean, it never hurt when I was younger and just starting out that you had put peanuts in your Coke when you were a kid or had eaten pickled pig's feet.
You put peanuts in your...
Oh, man. If you don't put peanuts in your Coca-Cola to get some salt to complement that sugar, you know, hadn't lived.
Honey, have you ever heard of that?
I have never heard of that in my life. And Peter is addicted to salt.
I just discovered boiled peanuts. Not discovered. I refused them the whole time. I just thought they were dirty.
They're wonderful.
They're the best thing in the world.
Boiled peanuts are wonderful.
But the idea of now put a couple of peanuts in my Coke, I like it. I mean, that's got to be good for you.
Well, you'll have trouble finding. In the old days, of course, we had the big, tall Coke bottles.
Right.
And you pop the top off with a church key, and then you take one of those long, slender bags of Planters salted peanuts, and you pour into that Coke.
So you poured the whole bag of Planters salted peanuts into the Coke?
You might not pour the whole bag. Now these were smaller bags, and these were big Cokes.
Okay.
But yeah, you poured the peanuts in those Cokes.
I'm just going to make sure I get the recipe right before I make one for Peter. I don't drink caffeine, but, you know, I feel like I got to teach it to him.
You know, Peter, I'm sure Peter didn't fall off the turnip truck yesterday, but I'm sure he sat at a bar and eating Slim Jims and pickled eggs out of the big jar.
I love pickled eggs. I love my, I love pickles. I love, you know, just all the, I do love the food of the South. I mean, it's some comedy. It's kind of funny now when you look at it that the food that wins the James Beard Awards now is basically some sort of modern interpretation of basically black soul food. If you are in New York City and you can somehow deconstruct collard greens and add truffle sauce to it or truffle oil to it, in some god-awful way.
Why would you put truffle oil on collards?
And you do it, you are going to get 2 stars from the New York Times. I mean, it's just, it's...
Well, my mama couldn't cook without Crisco. I'm just telling you.
God,
right,
Crisco.
Now.
Man, I remember having Crisco in the pantry. I had some recipes that called for Crisco.
So, Mac, who do you like? We'll rapid fire a little bit with you. Who are you? I mean, you switched over to the Democratic Party to vote in the primary?
Well, I left the Republican Party on my birthday in 2018, November 26th, to become an independent because I couldn't in good conscience be in the Trump Republican Party any longer. And then I have registered to vote in the Democrat primary, presidential preference primary here in Florida, because I think I can perhaps do more good there than I can do by not voting. So my intention is to vote for the candidate who is closest to the center with the best chance of winning the nomination and the election. And at the moment, it looks like Joe Biden.
That's what I was going to say. Joe Biden, right?
Yeah. At the moment, that would be the case. Yes.
All right. So this is where we're at, I think. If they nominate Sanders, that's like nominating Gillum. I mean, that's just you're going to give the race to
Donald Trump.
You give the race to the Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, well, if they nominate Sanders or Warren, they just ought to forfeit and save the money.
See, I like Warren a little bit. I do believe.
I don't know what your draw is to her. You've always had something with Warren, and I don't see it. It's amazing. It's shocking to me as your wife.
I think, number one, presidential elections, one after another, are a counter to whatever you had before. So if you had the erudite, aloof, black, you know, community organizer, it's going to be followed up by a neo-nationalist.
There's two theories here, Peter, on this whole thing. One theory, which everybody keeps returning to, is, you've got to get the base excited and you've got to turn them out. That was the Stephanie Abrams theory. That was the Andrew Gillum theory. That was the Beto O'Rourke theory in Texas. And the base didn't come out, and they lost. The other theory is appeal to those Reagan Democrats, that 35,000 votes in Michigan and Wisconsin and Ohio that cost Hillary Clinton the election. I mean, Trump only won by 70,000 votes spread over three states. 35,000 in one of them changed their minds, and Hillary Clinton's president. I would suggest to you that you're going to have a better chance of getting blue-collar Democrats in Pennsylvania and Ohio and Wisconsin to vote for Joe Biden than you're going to get a huge, massive turnout in Broward County for Bernie Sanders.
Well, go back to your first part of the theory about the base. I think that base argument is all well and good, but when you turn out somebody like Gillum, who antagonizes the Republican side so much so that they run up their base even more. Listen, there were 50,000 people that turned out in 2018 for DeSantis that would not have turned out had Gwen Graham been the nominee.
Yeah, the whole socialism, the whole tarring Democrats with every Democrat with the socialist brush is bullshit. But nominating somebody like Warren or Sanders, who says he's a socialist, makes it a hell of a lot easier.
What do you think about Buttigieg?
I like him. Well, I like him. Yeah, he's smart. He's articulate. He's really, really quick on his feet. He's obviously very bright. He is a veteran, with which I identify. I don't, as conservative as I am and as old school as I am, the fact that he is a homosexual or that he's gay, I guess is the more au courant way to describe it, doesn't bother me in the least. Doesn't bother me a bit. Do I think that he will win the nomination? No, I think that he probably won't because of a couple of curious circumstances. One is he's not progressive enough for his coevals, for those in the Democratic Party who are basically in his age cohort, on the one hand, and then he's too young and unseasoned for the old folks. So he's kind of in the crack, but he's an excellent candidate, and I assume he has a great future.
What the hell is the matter with America right now, Mac? I'm a simple meat and potatoes guy on this one. I say it's 9/11 plus 08. The guys from Saudi Arabia blew us up in 01, and that scared the shit out of us. And then the rest of folks lost their 401ks that they had been told to save for in 08, and nobody did anything about that. And so,
yeah, I think there's three broad things, and you've touched on them in a different way. that are going on. One is the economic transformation that's sweeping the world. I mean, it's like the, you know, the advent of the industrial age or the invention of printing. Globalization and the transition from an industrial to a service economy is creating so much dislocation and economic distress in so many communities that that is obviously a huge problem. I think the second area is that social changes that are roiling the status quo. You mentioned Peter Buttigieg, whether it's transgender issues, whether it's gay rights, whether it's civil rights or whatever, those things are disturbing the traditional balance. And then finally, it's the browning of America. In the 10, 20 years, white folks like me will be a minority. There'll be a plurality, but they'll be a minority. And as a wonderful book that I read last year is called How Democracies Die, as the authors pointed out, there is no example in history in which a dominant ethnic minority gracefully became a gracefully accepted loss of status and power. And that's what we're living at the moment.
You are you're a student of Roman history. And I'm not, I won't pretend that I am as well as you, but I'm fairly, like, I know the pre-empire days pretty well. And I know that everybody likes to say, oh, this is the fall of the Roman Empire and everything like that. And we're not even close to that. But we are in that period. If I remember my history well, there was a, you know, pre-empire period. This is Sulla. This is Marius, the Gracchi brothers before that. But the question of citizenship, and it was a big issue between the Romans, the citizens of Rome had citizenship, and the Italians did not. And they ended up fighting a civil war, the Romans did, against the Italians. And there was, it was a terrible thing because it did not, you know, the Romans were used to the big triumphs, and that's why they went to war. And with this, the Romans won, and all they ended up doing was, you know, killing the guys from 150 miles away. And I feel like that's where we're at, is like we're in this period where there is going to be some sort of, and I'm not saying civil war or anything like that, there is going to be a reckoning. And even when that comes, even if somebody, no matter what happens in this election, half the country is still going to be just as pissed off as it was going into it.
Yes, this will take a generation or two to work through. I mean, what's going on now, has the analogy can be overdrawn, as you point out, and it often is. But what's going on has a late republic feel to it. Hopefully, that's not the way it's going to go. But as I say, this transition period will take time. It will be difficult. It may, in some cases, some incidents, some be characterized by violence, although I hope not. But there's no stopping the future. See, that's one of the problems with, or that's maybe the principal problem. The principal problem with Trump and the Trump Republican Party is that its organizing principle is fear, whether it's economic fear, social fear, racial fear, white fright. The organizing principle is fear, and the desire is to avoid the future. MAGA, Make America Great Again, is basically reactionary and backward-looking. Let's go back. Let's go back to the way it was. It's never going to be the way it was again. Isaiah Berlin said about Franklin Roosevelt that Franklin Roosevelt's greatest strength wasn't his average intellect or his wonderful temperament. It was that he didn't fear the future, that he thought that whatever might come would be grist for his mill. Donald Trump's entire raison d'etre, his entire reason for being, is fear of the future. But the future is going to come. And the Trump GOP is not the future of America.
I don't disagree with you on your overall, although I do increasingly worry, and this isn't like the Margaret Atwood, like Gilead argument, but when I see things like the abortion debate, or if I see things with, I even see like people don't understand why is Trump putting tariffs on European goods? He puts Trump's tariffs on European goods because he knows rich coastal elites like them. They like French cheese. They like German cars. They like leather from Italy. And so he is. Mm-hmm. And along that same lines, like where Trump criticizes technology, where he's going against Amazon, and his people believe that the post office, that we should go back to an era where the post office was dominant as opposed to Amazon. And I feel like with a lot of these people, you know what, Mac, I genuinely believe this. It's not the men. The men have always been this way. The men have all, the white man has always been, you know, the Irish white man has always been basically a racist beast since he got over here. Mm-hmm. It's the depressed 60-year-old white working woman that somehow has lost out. That's the one where the suicide rate is increasing. That those women who are just being scourged by the diseases of despair. That's the difference here. Those are the people. They actually scare me more than the men. I know what I'm dealing with the men. I'm not afraid of Alabama. I'm not afraid of Mississippi. What I'm afraid of is somehow the women have lost hope, and that they're okay with subjugating other women. So long as you keep out the brown Guatemalan worker from, you know, like Mac, I watched the Pope the other day, and I'm just thinking, how can he was talking about, you know, we are harsh to women and to mothers. If you are a Guatemalan and you have marched 1,000 miles to get to the United States and you are the mother of five, we should do everything in the world to protect you. Instead, we're sending you to Honduras to wait it out in an asylum center there. And it's just crazy to me. It's just simply crazy.
Well, the demographics, you know, I won't live to see it. You may not live to see it, but the demographics will solve it. That woman you're talking about and her husband and I will all be dead soon. And from everything I can see in terms of attitudes in society and the polling data and all, the generations that are coming do not share that worldview.
No, they don't. If you look at our daughters, like they just look at, they're just so embarrassed of us. Our daughter isn't there, but you look at the 15, 16-year-olds and they're like, you're going to be an asshole to somebody who's gay. It's just like, it's just crazy. The looks that they give us
they aren't even fazed by friends coming out as transgender. They're just, it's amazing to watch how supportive these kids are. And it's just so, it really just is not in their makeup to be as closed-minded as, you know, people before them have been. And it's not even a fault. It just wasn't something that we ever had to address before. It's just, you know, shifting tides as we evolve.
What do you like at the local level, state and local? What do you think there? How would you grade DeSantis so far?
Wait a minute. Speaking of state and local level, going back to something you and I were trying to do last week, Bob Buckhorn just did a tweet where he tagged me on the publication of Rick Wilson's book. You and I may have missed a bet on that.
Yeah,
Buckhorn is away.
His book. I was trying to get. I had the early galleries to Rick's book, and I was just like, wouldn't it have been great to have Mac review it? Like, you know,
that would have been
one ever Trumper on top of. Are you amazed? I was going to go to local. Mac, I mean, it's just, listen, and Michelle, I'll just shed a little light on our kitchen table. The only real fight that Michelle and I have had over the course of our marriage was Trump. And it was after he was elected. I was coming from having lived in New York. I was like, hey, we know this guy. He's going to turn out to be a Democrat. You wait and see. Everybody who's done business with him in New York knows he's just a flim-flam guy. I mean, he'll do whatever to, and so, and she was, no, this is an existential threat to womanhood and humanity.
She was right.
And she was right. And that was a few days of that, and I was, but we went at it, because I'm just like, no, come on, give him a break.
Yeah, it is the only time in our marriage that we really, I mean, screaming matches almost. It was, because it was just like so emotionally wrought. I just couldn't understand how you couldn't see it. And I hate that I was right. I wish you had been right. I wish he had been the New Yorker who
I thought he was going to be Giuliani, like the Giuliani was as mayor, you know, just where, yeah, I'm a Republican, but, you know, I believe in schools and the environment. And he turned out to be the opposite of that. And it's just like,
no, he just believes in Trump. That's like, that is really the problem at the core of it. It's just,
but he's surrounded by people like Stephen Miller. I mean, that's, and I mean, all Donald Trump wants, all he wants in the world is a good write-up in the New York Times. I mean, that's all the guy wants.
That's right.
And
that's the truth.
I mean, if they just had given this fucking guy a write-up that said, hey, he's not doing too bad on this, the whole world would be different.
But, you know, if the top of the food chain in New York society hadn't treated him like the guy he is, maybe he wouldn't have been so bitter. We need to approach the airport for reasons unknown to me. Dave Ehrenberg wants to have lunch with me. I hope he's not going to charge me with some long forgotten crime.
We will. We'll land the plane here, Mac. You know, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate who you are and what you stand for. And you know, we are gifted, and we're going to tell people 25 years from now. That we knew the legendary, you know, Mac Stepanovich. Hopefully I'm coming to visit you.
asking you for your advice.
Asking you for your
when
advice.
When you're 98 years old.
All right. Well, y'all come call me next time we're here. And now that I'm retired and you're rich, you can buy me a drink.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mac.
Thanks, Mac.
A lot of people give their opinions on politics and not just the talking heads on cable news. Everyone has an opinion. Sometimes a gentleman's wager can be the best way to tell how much someone believes their own spin. That's why you should check out what Predictit is doing. Predictit is like the stock market, but for politics. Instead of buying and selling oil futures, you can buy and sell shares in everything from who the Democratic nominee will be to if the president will be impeached. It's easy and only costs a few bucks to get started. He Said, She Said listeners can get a special introductory offer by visiting predictit.org/promo/FLAPOL.
All right, that was exactly what I knew that interview was going to be with Mac.
Yeah, and you know, his story about the governor inviting him for lunch just kind of spoke to me in a way. I mean, that's, A, it was a different time. A governor just couldn't really do that now. But it is, little moments like that in life can change the trajectory of someone's life. You know, it's Gasparilla this weekend. It was the Gasparilla parade when Lawton Trials was governor, and Walking Lawton was walking the parade route. And he came over to me and stopped and talked. And a picture of me and the governor, and I was in a hideous orange Florida Gators sweatsuit. I can't believe my mother let me wear that out. But ended up on the cover of the Times, or the Tampa Tribune, I'm sorry. And having met a governor made me feel like I could go into politics, because the governor of our state took the time to stop and talk to me and thought that I mattered. You know, now I know that that was just great politics, but you know, that was a relatively small moment. That was just a governor. That was just a politician being a politician. And, you know, for Mac, that's a relatively small moment for that governor, right? To have a little boy over for lunch. But
it's like the Clinton picture meeting Kennedy, although he was at Boy State, so he knew he wanted to be. But what in politics? But yeah, whenever the bug bites you,
yeah,
it never goes away, right?
Nope.
And you know, I'd love to talk more about that, and I could dissect the interview. I mean, Mac made some great, interesting points, but can we please talk about a more important, maybe the most important issue ever,
the most important issue of the day?
Yes, which is
the biggest crisis of our lifetime.
It is called
Megxit.
That's so terrible. I mean, you knew that. I mean, the moment that happened to Mike, how long until the Daily Sun or the Mirror or the Telegraph is calling the breakup of the Duke and Duchess of, not the breakup, the break off of the Duke and Duchess of Sussex
from the royal family
as Mexit? I mean, that's just amazing.
It's although, perfect. And I will say, I now have digital subscriptions to more British media outlets than I ever intended to in my lifetime. And I need to remember to cancel them all before the free trials end.
I think, all right, so I'm going to start with Mexit is a terrible name because it puts it all on her. Like, it puts all the responsibility of what has happened all on her.
And you don't think that she is the driving force for him abandoning his obligation to
as much as we can get into shitting family on her, and I'm happy about that. He's just been a stick in the mud from day one. He's been.
He used to be a very carefree, lighthearted. He used to be the fun prince.
When he was dressing up as a Nazi?
Right. Well, no, exactly. That was a big mistake. And listen, you know I don't love Prince Harry. I have always been a Prince William girl.
Yes, so, you have been. I know that. By the way, Michelle is on a scale of 1 to 10. She is a 14 on when it comes to obsession with the royals.
I'm not obsessed with the royals. I enjoy.
Oh my God, you listen to a royals podcast? I listen every morning.
Every morning.
When?
No.
When are the royals not on? Like I hear
I
it when I'm getting dressed.
I listen to a lot of podcasts. Today, I was not listening to a Royals podcast. I was listening to a Real Housewives podcast called Bitch Sesh.
I think they kind of all blend together.
Just think all the podcasts are the same. It's different women talking about things. I do listen to two different Royals podcasts, yes. But I also listen to a lot of other podcasts, including Wow in the World with our daughter.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
She liked the Frozen one. She liked the Santa one.
Yes.
Right.
Santa Claus put out a wonderful podcast, and that got us through December. Every day, he had a great 18-minute podcast.
That was fantastic.
It was. I hope Santa does it again next year.
Or maybe the Easter Bunny could do one.
It would be great. Someone should do an Easter Bunny podcast.
We should just jump on.
We should just do it.
Producing that for the Easter Bunny.
Yeah, let's hire the Easter Bunny.
Right, and tell him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. Is the Easter Bunny a boy or a girl?
I think he's a boy. What do you think?
Well, our rabbit is a girl, allegedly.
Well, you know, you just can't really tell the rabbit's gender unless you know what you're looking for.
Right. So why are Meghan and... I feel like I should talk in a British voice. Why are...
That's not a British accent.
Why are Meghan and Harry doing what they're doing? Why are they destroying our lives?
Why are they... They're not destroying our lives. They're providing us great entertainment right now, actually.
Why are they doing this to their family?
I mean, they...
Here, let me give you the answer. Because, as is shown in the third season of The Crown, this is just some strain that just goes through all of them. From King Edward
to Prince Charles. Yeah, if you look all the way back, the spare... And also, there's always a problem with the spare. The spare always has a hard time finding their footing.
Well, Edward wasn't the spare. I mean, and he abdicated.
I understand, he wasn't. But, like, if you go back, all of... Like, Margaret... who is Elizabeth's sister, had a hard time.
Listen, I watched the show too. So
okay, well, I'm not doing it based on the show. Thank you. I'm doing it based on the other books I read. But yes, the spare has always had a hard time finding their footing because basically the spare doesn't matter. The spare only becomes consequential if something happens to the heir.
Maybe it's people like you saying that the spare doesn't matter that causes the issues with the spare. Maybe if we just said, hey, you've got this great platform and life.
Well, and that
you're not the spare.
Like, they do have
you're
this great platform and life, but guess what? They think that they get to have their cake and eat it too. They want to keep their platform, but they don't want to do any of the work that goes with it. So, they want to separate from the royal family, not support, you know, the family's efforts, and they want to go live in Canada, but they want to capitalize on their royal fame.
So let's say many years from now, Elizabeth is gone. Charles is gone. William is the king. Imagine if Harry is the really cool prince.
He was supposed to be.
That would have been a great life.
That would have been
an amazing life.
So, you know, there's been much talk made about Prince Charles wanting a slimmed down monarchy because Queen Elizabeth had a much larger monarchy. Cousins were all had roles. And that had, it served its purpose. But Prince Charles has made it very clear that he wanted to slim down monarchy. And during the Queen's Diamond Jubilee, they kind of gave us a preview of what that looked like on the balcony. And it was Charles and William and Harry. Harry was always supposed to be their part of the plans. Like, King, when William becomes the king, if William becomes the king at this point, he needed his brother to help bear the burden of the royal family's obligations. And that, to me, that's kind of the shame of this all. I don't begrudge them wanting to give their child a different life. You know, it made sense to me that they didn't give their child a royal title, but you can create that path. You can give your children normalcy and still perform your obligations. I don't know.
So I think the whole thing, I mean, I know. All right. So we're just putting aside Meghan as we talk about Harry. I think the whole thing came apart, and we were listening to it beforehand on Andy Cohen. Thank goodness for the great insights he's providing on this.
I mean, he didn't even know what photo they were talking about. He didn't even know what the Queen's Christmas photo was.
Well, that's what I thought.
Please give me analysis.
I thought that was the straw that broke the camel's back was
the photo of the Queen
and the succession photo.
The succession photo.
That's what we like to call it at my new podcast called Peter is Obsessed with the Royals. Peter is secretly obsessed with the Royals. It's a new podcast and it's a daily email, which you need more of from me.
And I'm looking for sponsors.
Yes, right. sponsored by Virgin Airlines.
So the photo of the Queen with the three future kings.
Yes, with Charles,
William, and George.
And the other kid.
Not the other kid. Sweet Prince George, who is about Ella's age, honey.
Right.
Right. Not the other kid.
I'm sorry.
The other kid is what you would call the ones who aren't in direct line for the throne.
Who's Archie?
Harry's kid.
Yeah, nobody likes him. I mean, he's like 15th from the throne, right?
I think he's 8th.
William would have to die.
William's children would have to die. Harry would have to die.
And then we get to, so he's 8th. No, he's 7th.
Yeah, I think Charles.
Harry's 6th.
So wait, is Harry 6th or do you mean back to say Charles, William, George, Charlotte, Louis, yes, Harry, Archie.
Right.
Right.
So he is.
Listen,
he is as close to becoming king as I am.
It's not happening.
Basically, got.
And if Kate gets her way, there'll be another Cambridge kid in the mix to bump.
Why can't the woman take over? I know the lines of succession, but how did Elizabeth become? I mean, clearly
there was no male heir.
Okay.
Yes, there was no male heir. That's how she became the queen. And when Kate and William got married, and Kate was pregnant. The Queen changed the rules for the succession. And if their first child had been a female, she would have been the heir.
Oh, really?
And that would have been the first time in history. So secretly, I was hoping they had a girl, but they had a boy.
And you don't like the actress portraying the Queen on the Crown. Let's go to that. Let's get to the bottom of that.
Let's go to Olivia Colman as Queen Elizabeth in season 3 of The Crown. Well, I didn't like her the first half of the season. But now I have adjusted to her in the role. I just feel like it was a stark contrast from Claire Foy's portrayal of Queen Elizabeth. But as I have come to see, and I've discussed it with you, it's really just Claire Foy got more fun material for the Queen. Olivia Colman is having to portray the Queen in a more staid time in her life and a little bit of a darker period for the royal family.
Well, I would say that I love Miss Coleman in Fleabag, by the way. I just want to put that out there. It is a hilarious show. I really liked The Crown, the episode where the coal mine collapsed. I thought that was excellent. Production value was amazing. I do want to know what we're going to do with some of the souvenirs that have the Duke and Duchess of Sussex.
I did not buy many of those souvenirs. If you recall, you tried to push a lot of them on me. And as I told you,
I thought that they're going to be in limited supply. Now you can't get them because Meghan has put
a trademark on Sussex Royal. Good luck, Meghan. I'm sure that's going to be part of the exit agreement that the Queen and the royal family is hammering out with them. They will strictly limit because you cannot capitalize on royalty, which is part of the problem. That's part of why the royal family is not allowed to have jobs outside of being working royals is because you're not allowed to be seen to be capitalizing on the monarchy for your own personal gain. The monarchy is supposed to support Great Britain.
You brought up a very interesting fact the other day, which I did not know.
What? What fact did I bring up for you?
That Meghan Markle was a model on...
Deal or No Deal.
Deal or No Deal.
Yeah, she was a suitcase girl.
That explains everything to me.
Yeah, like, she's just clearly been trying to work her way up the celebrity food chain.
And that just explains everything. Now,
suitcase model on Deal or No Deal. Lifetime movie actress. Hallmark movie actress. Bad cable television show.
Would Harry have been better off had he married Lacey Chabert?
Absolutely, because Lacey Chabert
would have moved right
into that castle, and she would have been bacon for the queen.
The answer is yes, period. If you have not seen Winter in Vail on the Hallmark Channel, it is.
Or any of Lacey's other work.
Any of Lacey's incredible body.
Christmas in Rome.
Period. Of work, period.
Christmas in Rome, the greatest Christmas movie of this season.
It is the best Hallmark movie of 2019.
Correct.
I don't know what the Academy Awards of Hallmark movies are.
I don't think there are any.
The Hollies, maybe?
We should start them.
Get it? H-O-L.
Yeah, we should start those awards.
Yes, she would have won. She would win for Christmas in Rome. And that would win. It would win Best Picture. It would win the Holly for Best Picture. She would have won the Holly for Best Actress, right?
Right.
I still think the guy with the kind of like, you know, the face that I like, the guy that has like the darker lips and skin, like he looks weird.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. You describe men in very interesting ways when you're trying to describe actors to me. And just like the things you notice are very weird.
I'm quietly and secretly, I find them all very good looking, but not too good looking. I think they definitely have the model for that. Okay, so let's turn to Meghan Markle. I mean, my argument with this is, and everybody, like, I will give her this credit. England is racist, number one. Everybody knows that. Number two, the English press is racist. Everybody knows. These are absolutes. But
please, let's talk in absolutes, please. Because that's never gets you in trouble.
But she... She knew what she was getting into when she married. Was she not expecting a domineering family and a lot of what did she think she was marrying into?
I don't understand. And, you know, she tried to say in interviews that when they first got engaged that she wasn't really that familiar with the royal family. And then you see pictures of her in college posing in front of Buckingham Palace, and friends say that she was obsessed with Princess Diana. So she clearly knew what she was getting into. Yes, it's restrictive. Yes, it's a conservative institution. Yes, there are pretty strict rules on the women in that family. And you toe the line. And I guess she just thought that she was going to go in there and make all these changes. And instead, she went in and blew it up. And I just... Here's the thing. I don't care that they want to go to Canada and raise their kid. Go. I don't really like the way they did it.
Right.
You could have done that by handling it privately. You didn't need to issue some bombastic statement on Instagram and then expect the queen to bow to you. You bow to the queen, Meghan. The queen does not bow to anyone.
But the queen kind of backed. I mean, she gave up here. Didn't she give in to...
She hasn't told us our terms yet. All she said is that they are going to work through it. Yes, he's her grandson at the end of the day. And she also learned her lesson from Diana. She learned her lesson when she didn't respond quickly enough and make public statements after Diana died and the backlash that she got from the public. And so the queen did have to finally break her rule that the royal family does not make public statements on personal matters. And so I think that she learned her lesson from there and she's applied that here. And so that's why she had to come out and say, and listen, so did William and Harry put out an unprecedented joint statement together, you know, debunking the reporting that the Cambridges had bullied the Sussexes out of the royal family. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, I don't really care.
Don't pretend like you don't care. No, that's not true.
I do care. Do I hope the queen strips them of their HRH styling? Yes. I don't think that they should be your royal highnesses anymore. They can keep the Sussex name, but they should not be royal highnesses anymore if they're not going to be working members of the royal family.
How would you address them if you...
They're literally just Mary and Meghan and Harry, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex.
So you want people to come in and say, hey, Meghan.
Well, no, they still call Diana Princess Diana, or they called her Diana. So Diana was, when Diana was divorced Charles, she lost her HRH status, but she was still the Princess of Wales. They did not take that from her. And I'm not saying take Duke and Duchess of
Sussex.
They
never could.
Well, there'll be a new Princess of Wales soon.
There will?
When Charles becomes king.
Right.
Kate will be the Princess of Wales.
I like how I like the Charles on the crown.
I do too.
I think I've told you, I think he will play, that actor should get work as a villain.
Yeah, I agree with you. He could really be like fighting with, was it Cillian Murphy? Two-Face, right?
Yes.
He could totally be fighting.
Well, Cillian Murphy was Scarecrow.
Scarecrow, that's what
but
I
that's
meant.
That's okay.
I'm sorry, yeah, Scarecrow. I even saw the bag over the head.
Jesus
sorry,
Christ,
I don't
even know why I try with you. I mean, how do you not know who played Scarecrow in Batman Begins?
My bad. At least I got the actor's name right.
Speaking of Cillian Murphy, speaking of BAFTA Awards, what did you think about the Academy Award nomination?
I'm really pissed. Frozen 2 was robbed. How was it not nominated for Best Animated Feature?
Oh, it really? Oh, no. I don't pay attention to those awards.
I read the whole listing.
What else got nominated?
Toy Story 3 got nominated.
Four,
yeah.
That'll win.
Right. I think Frozen 2
song?
Was better. It got nominated for song.
Into the Unknown.
But I think that
you have to have Into the Unknown to sing for.
Yeah, you have to have Idina Menzel on stage singing at the Academy Awards. You have to have good singing.
It's wow. I thought it was a better movie than the first one. I know.
I can't believe it wasn't nominated. I feel like
which of the movies
which is more egregious, Frozen 2 not getting a nomination or the director of Little Women not getting a nomination? No female director again getting nominated.
Okay, so number one. Going back to England is racist. Women can't direct, period. I mean, it's just one of those things. Like, I think about it, and it's just...
Do we need a separate category?
I think, no.
For female directors.
These awards just talk about, tying it into our whole conversation today, the nostalgia of white men, like Irishman, 1917, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's all about, like... white men, like, literally saying, hey, it was better 50 years ago.
Right.
Like, it's literally, like, that's, like, it's not about whiteness. It's literally about nostalgia. It's about people, like, where is the, I don't know, like, more, and Little Women, obviously, is not in that same category. But it's just, like, is there nothing contemporary? Is there nothing modern? Like, why is, all of these movies are about a yearning for something that no longer exists. And the directors made them, and an audience the Academy rewarded them for fulfilling their desire. And it's the same reason why Trump is so successful is because he is about nostalgia. He is about making America great again. These movies
are
about making Hollywood great again. I really feel that way. And so
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's right there in the title.
You're right. It's right there in the title. And so the Irishman is literally about making 70-year-old men 40 years old again.
I watched 1 hour of that 3.5-hour movie, and I just can't believe that.
I've watched it now for a second time. It is, I get it now on a set. It is a great movie. I will say that. It is. I did watch it. I did what a lot of people did. And broke it up, and that's not fair to Martin Scorsese.
But that's the platform.
I love the direction.
When you put out a movie on a streaming platform, and that is where you're releasing the movie, that's what people do on streaming services. They watch something and they walk away and they come back later. Maybe the director should have known his platform. That's my argument to you on that.
I don't want to be like so woke here.
Honey, I don't think we're woke at all.
No. Well, why is every movie about men and violence?
That's why I don't watch a lot of them.
Like, and why do we value that? Like, I think it was, I'm going to get her name wrong, the director of Little Women, Greta...
Gerwig?
Gerwig, who was saying, like, we just put a premium at the hierarchy in movies of men plus violence. Avengers, Irishman.
Look at what you watch.
I know.
Yeah.
Like, but women communal stories, you know, that gets designated to, you know, the Pix channel or whatever. I mean, it's just like, they're just, and I don't know what the hell's the matter with other men that they can't, like, watch a movie that doesn't have.
Well, what do you get out of those movies? Because you love them.
But I like all movies.
No, you don't like all movies.
I like most movies.
You didn't really like Lady and the Tramp, the live action
That's
version.
That's true.
On
I didn't
Plus.
Like Lady. But I love great acting. I love, like right now, I love Fleabag. I love Euphoria. I love these. I didn't love it, but I liked Killing Eve. Like, I don't understand why men can't watch. Why can't we watch shows, movies with women in them? I really, and it's not, I'm not like saying I'm awesome. I just don't understand why these movies, like, they're not as successful at the box office. Obviously, they're not going to make, like, they have trouble succeeding. They have trouble being recognized. And it's because fanboys out there can't, they just can't get past it.
Is it just the difference between men and women, though, too? Maybe men go to the movies more than women do.
Well, look at what
because
they,
I'm not going to take time away
Wars.
From my child to go to the, like, to go to the movies. That's just not, if I have other things I want to do. So I'm going to wait till something comes out on demand, and I'm going to watch it in the comfort of my living room, unless it's something truly special, which, you know, for me, the last one was A Star Is Born. That's the last movie I went to in the movie theater, aside from Frozen 2, but that's with my child.
I don't get it. I get the disappointment. I get the idea of, like, for them to not nominate Jennifer Lopez. It was the performance of a lifetime out of her, and instead,
but do people just have a hard time taking her seriously because,
well, they clearly
Geely girl, and
well, look at Adam Sandler probably. You know,
Adam Sandler
got snubbed.
He totally got snubbed.
And I don't, the only problem with that is I don't know who you would take out. Like, all the other actors in that category turned in a really good performance.
Weren't there two from The Irishman in that category? Can't you just pick one?
Well, think about, I think Margot Robbie got nominated for the
Margot Robbie.
Yeah. I mispronounce names.
So that's whatever. So, and that is the argument I'm hearing from everyone is she should not have been nominated. Jennifer Lopez should have been nominated. Is what I have been hearing.
Yes, that's definitely...
That wasn't even a great performance of Margot's.
No, she would say it's the second best performance she did last year. I think she did a better part in Hollywood. Okay, so we've covered Max Stepanovich, The Crown, the Academy Awards. What else do we need to cover this week?
Are there any new shows you're watching on Netflix?
I'm watching Messiah.
And how is Messiah?
It is like every other show on Netflix. Good, but not great.
Because I love the start of the year. Netflix has dropped a lot of great new programming.
They have. Well, there are so many good, serviceable shows on there.
Yeah.
Like, if you told me right now, Messiah is not coming back next season, I'd be like, oh, okay. Like, if you had told me that about The Wire, I would kill you.
Right. Well, so I binged Spinning Out on Netflix, and it was excellent. It was... A really, at first it just like, it looked
Which
like
one
a
is spinning out.
So that's what I'm okay. telling you right now. At first it looked like,
well, let me mansplain it to you.
Just a, please do. It looked like just a fluffy, romantic, television show about, figure skaters, ice skaters. And what it really was is a pretty deep dive into mental health and bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
The two female characters leads both suffer from it. And it was probably one of the best depictions I've seen of bipolar disease on a television show.
Oh, now I know why I don't watch shows about women.
It's not just about women. It's about athletes. Anyways, it's excellent. And it ended. I mean, I could not stop binging it. And it ended on a cliffhanger. And so I am dying for a second season. So please watch Spinning Out so Netflix gives them a second season. It's a really good show, though. You should try it.
No, I will definitely. And you're also
January watching. Jones is the mom. Remember when you're like, who's that actress? Why does she look familiar? Because it was Betty Draper.
I love January Jones.
And she is, her role is, she turns in a great performance there.
Okay.
She's not quite believable to me as the mom. She's a little too young to be cast as the mom of the, so it's a figure skater who had a horrific injury and like cracked her skull open and is too afraid to skate. So she becomes a pair skater. She's the daughter of January Jones. And so January Jones, I felt like was a little young to play the mother of this actress. And, but it's still a great show.
Well, that reminds me that, two things, Parasite, you're talking about Netflix, which reminds me of Amazon, which reminds me that they're showing the movie by the Korean director, whose name we can't pronounce, which reminds me of the greatest development over the last year, which is the discovery by me of gochujang sauce, which is like the Korean.
Do you like that better than the artisanal soy sauce I got you for Christmas?
Which is what I was going to say is my favorite Christmas present is my artisanal soy sauces that you got for me. Last night I tried them on all of my sushi. I was trying different
bites. I saw
bites.
All the bottles out when I came home from my Girl Scout leader.
It was amazing. Soy sauce was flying, different tastes, everything. It was crazy. So that was a great present. All right. Well, next week we will have all sorts of coverage of the legislative session. We'll get a little bit more serious. I don't know if Michelle has noticed that I've been talking in my serious interviewer voice of her today.
Oh, do you think I haven't noticed what you've been doing? You've been totally trying to direct the episode, and that's fine.
What is your, as we close out on our anniversary, what has been the best part about being married to each other? You can go first.
Well, that's easy. That's like literally a no-brainer.
What is that?
We made Ella Joyce.
All right. Number two reason. Nope. Number two reason. Nope. No, because I was going
to
use
just
that one.
Because you asked a weak question doesn't mean that I have to then play your game. So what's your reason? You can't steal mine.
I'm going back to Ella's resolution today that she wants breakfast. Like, I want breakfast. That just reminds me.
And it's like, kid, I have taught you how to make your own bowl of cereal. I've taught you how to get your own yogurt. I've taught you all of these things.
Ella's New Year's resolution was that
one of them. She has three. She has three.
Number two was, and I only want to bring up, you talk about, she's like, I want breakfast or something like that. And I'm thinking about the card she made about me on Christmas.
You and I both got kind of like shit on by Ella Joyce with her teacher, like her Christmas card.
Her Christmas card to me was, oh, we went to Disney Springs. That was the night Daddy
threw a temper tantrum because he wanted to go back to the bar and drink. Like, and then her New Year's resolution is, I want to remind Mom to make breakfast.
That was amazing.
It was amazing, which, by the way, I do make her breakfast, but she likes to sleep in, and then I offer her breakfast, and she doesn't want it.
This is not the number one thing, but I would say this is just something totally off the top of my head, which is... and it's proving a double negative. You don't, like, I never have to worry about you. Like, in the lying, jealousy, arguing, bullshit way that so many other...
I am not passive-aggressive.
No, not even... It's not even about you not being passive-aggressive. It's like, I don't... Like, when you leave the house, I'm not just like, man, is she banging the physical therapist? Like when you tell me something, I believe it 1,000%. And you've never proven me, or you've never...
Because I'm not made a liar.
I know, but everybody else in the world lies, especially working in politics. Everybody else lies.
But you shouldn't lie to your partner.
I know.
There's just no reason to.
But all of those things. But think about it. Like,
and who is the hardest person to lie to? I catch every lie.
We know so much. We've seen so much drama in our lives. And it's not to make fun. Everybody goes through it. But I just have never had to deal with that with you. So.
Well, thank you, honey. I have a follow-up. Here's my other favorite part of our marriage.
Oh, yeah. All right.
What a great Girl Scout cookie dad you are.
Thank you. Let's close with that.
It's the start of Girl Scout cookie season.
Yes.
So we are in a little bit of Girl Scout cookie. I'm the troop leader, so it's a little bit of... it is a labor of love, but it is a full-time job. And thank goodness I... went to college and I have a business mind, because managing the cookie businesses for all 12 of my Girl Scouts is not the easiest thing. And Ella, again, has some pretty aggressive goals this year, right, babe?
I think she wants to sell 48,000.
No, she said her goal was 1,000 boxes of cookies, but part of that is she hasn't seen what the prizes are yet. when she sees that there's a category for 2,300, like 2,300 boxes is the highest category, she's going to try to get us to help her sell that much again. And I don't know if we can do that. What do you think?
If we got the help of the he said, she said audience, maybe we could get there.
Well, and a lot of you have already purchased cookies. So thank you. We really appreciate that.
Did you want to think?
I don't have the list. I had it yesterday. So here's the thing. We came into the studio yesterday to record the podcast, and there was an emergency. The building we record in is literally attached to the courthouse. And when the alarms were sounding and telling us to evacuate, that there was an emergency and the whole building evacuated, it kind of threw off our whole day. And that's why we're recording on a Tuesday instead of a Monday. But I had the stuff then, and I don't have it now. But I mean, I know that... I don't want to name only some people and leave other people out.
Right.
But
I don't want to thank Chris Dudley for those 40 boxes that he bought. I mean, that's amazing.
Or Kennedy Mayernick.
Kennedy Mayernick. How about this? Jimmy Patronus, who lost his father last week, woke up this morning in sunburn and bought 2 boxes for us. And
yeah,
so
that was really kind of
that
them.
For with everything that he's got going on, thank you to him for taking
supporting
time
Ella's
to do
cookie
that.
Goals.
So.
It's a listen. For me, it's I love to see how motivated these kids get. And I like to see for Ella, I like to see her working really hard to push herself out of her comfort zone. She's looking forward to making her poster again, which is her cookie sales pitch, because she likes to go door to door. And as you all know, she doesn't like to talk to a lot of people. So she has figured out a way to sell cookies without saying a word. And it's pretty fascinating to watch. And I'm proud of her because it reminds me of my days going door to door for campaigns and how hard it is to knock on a strange door. And that kid is fearless about it. So that's why we do this cookie stuff. So thank you guys.
Thank you for everything. Thank you for listening.
Now let's go celebrate our anniversary.